This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
This is Steve.
And this is Ryan.
You're listening to 60 Cycle Hum, the guitar buying, selling, trading, fixing, modding, breaking, reviewing podcast.
That was a very polite intro, Steve.
Thank you.
You're in a polite mood today, I guess.
I suppose.
Are you going to keep this up the whole episode?
No.
I suppose. All right, welcome to episode 15.
Yeah.
The big one, 5.
15.
Are we going to celebrate in any way?
No.
Yeah, we're not.
No.
Who cares, right?
Maybe 25?
Yeah, we could celebrate 25.
Okay, cool.
Quarter of 100?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? And then we'll celebrate 50, and then we'll celebrate 100.
100.
And then we'll celebrate...
Just... Do you want to just do the hundreds? Oh, just jump all the way to 500.
Yeah, if we get to 500...
That means we're not going to celebrate for like
if
a couple years.
If we get to 500, that will be... what is that? 10
like 10 years?
Wow.
That's assuming minimal breaks.
Do we... Oh, man, I haven't thought 10 years ahead. Do we want to do this for 10 years?
Well, you know, we could get to 500 faster if we switch to a shorter format.
Let's get this really popular.
Let's chop this down to like 5-minute format.
Yeah, let's get this podcast super popular, and then right around like 175, we'll just sell it off to Ira Glass and Mark Maron, and they can do the show.
Ira Glass and Mark Maron.
Yeah, it'll be incredible. Ira Glass will play...
Hey, guys.
We'll have Ira Glass play me, and Mark Maron will play you.
Okay.
And then they can switch like every other episode.
Hey guys, this is Ira Glass, and you're listening to 60 Cycle Hum.
Hey, this is Mark Maron. Welcome, 60 Cycle Humtards, 60 Cycle Hum Buddies, 60 Cycle Huminauts.
Thank you, Mark, for that wonderful introduction.
This is awful. This is a terrible bit we're doing, and we should stop it
immediately. Hey, what's new? You got anything?
I do have something new. We didn't discuss this before the episode. Not to ruin the mystique of podcasting, we usually like discuss a little bit before
I don't want to say we have the... I'm sure there are podcasts with looser formats, but one thing that I don't know if... I definitely hear it in other podcasts, and some of it might just be because a lot of podcasts are Skyping.
Sure.
But I've heard other podcasters talk about their editing process. Basically, when you listen to this podcast, you're hitting, except for the song which the song which gets tagged on like afterwards.
Uh-huh.
You're pretty much hearing. Wow. This is exactly what I'm getting at. You're hearing like 45 minutes to an hour of just like dual streaming conscious thought.
Yeah. We know the topics we're going to hit. We have no idea what we're going to say about them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think about it a little bit, but,
sure,
but literally
sure.
Like we at the most like going in literally like 10 minutes before we press record, Ryan goes, all right, for this episode, let's talk about this ad. And this ad, what should our main topic be?
Right.
And I'll be like, I saw this weird question, or we got this email or whatever.
And you can help us out by sending us topics.
When you send an email, it actually at least gives us more of an opportunity to think about things. Usually I just read the email and go, that's a neat idea, and then I don't think about it again.
Right,
right. But sometimes I do, in the back of my mind, it's there, and I think about it. Anyway.
Spontaneity is fun. It makes it interesting for us.
So what's your new thing?
New thing, I got that Topanga Spring Reverb a while back.
Right, and you hate it.
I don't hate it.
Oh, okay.
I used it on my recording in the studio, and Catalan Bread, the guys who made it, came out with a thing, and they've revealed that it has a secret function.
Oh.
It has a secret in it, and that's kind of interesting. Basically, what you do is you take your pedal and you've got it turned on.
Okay.
And then you unplug the power jack, the 9-volt power jack.
Right.
And then you there's one of the specific knobs. You turn it all the way down.
Okay.
And then you plug it back in.
Right.
And then you turn the knob where you want it to be, and it basically it changes it from being a normal spring reverb to being a spring reverb that has a modulation on it.
Weird.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool. Like, it's got a really neat, like, ambient kind of sound to it. I'll have to show it to you later after when we're done recording.
But, how would you compare this to, like the mod on... Because you had the Verbzilla before, right?
Yeah.
Is it, like, different than the mod
it's
function on that?
It's probably pretty similar to that. What I would describe it as is a more subtle take on, like, the Holy Grail flurb setting.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of like a modulated reverb, but it's kind of, like, airy and kind of, like,
right,
chorusy. It's kind of like when you have the modulation on an analog delay.
Right.
Sort of situation. Okay. But it's really neat that they threw that in there and didn't really tell anyone until, you know, kind of way after the fact that the pedal started selling.
Yeah.
And it's not the sort of thing I think you just discover on your own. You have to be told that you can do that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can do it and then consistently power off your board and repower it.
Right.
And have
you
it
might
still
have
be
to
there.
Do the whole thing every time.
Yeah, but it's not hard to do as long as you have your pedal set up where you can get to the power
right,
pretty quick. I think it does turn, it does engage and disengage when you use a switch. It doesn't. So, like, every time you turn it on, every time you turn it on during your session, you don't have to do the trick sort of thing.
Gotcha.
And
that's
then you
cool.
can reset it, I think, just by pulling the power and then putting it back in without doing the knob thing. But yeah, that's my new story for this week.
Cool.
Should we get into ads?
Sure.
First ad. This caught my attention. I follow a music shop that's up in LA on Facebook because they specialize in kind of vintage guitars that I'm interested in.
Right.
And vintage amps and kind of the scene that I'm into. They posted this on their Facebook page a little bit ago. And it is a neck plate, just the neck plate from a Fender Strat from 1968. And it comes with four screws. I think the screws are new. They look like new screws to me. And we wanted to talk about this because just the neck plate off a 1968 Strat is worth $130, apparently.
Yeah.
And this is a piece of metal with four holes in it, a serial number stamped in it, and the F logo from Fender.
I'm trying to remember if in 1968 they had started stamping the necks with the serials yet.
Well, I looked up eBay and there were only like two existing other neck plates, and they both had the F on it.
No, the F, yeah, I know they do that. I'm saying as far as it's got that serial number on it, where did they have the serial number on the headstock?
Oh, I don't know.
Because it seems like if you've got... Now, if they were just stamping it on the neck plate, then you can slap this on any 68,
uh-huh,
and you're in business. If it's got to be matching, then it's just kind of, I don't know. It seems like kind of weird.
I don't think the numbers would correspond even if it was pristine.
Right.
I have no idea though.
Yeah.
I'm just pulling that guess right out of my butt and waving it around the room.
Yeah.
I don't know. Here it is.
A lot of this sold... 68's kind of a... 68 is just starting to move into kind of like this vintage collectability right now.
Sure.
I mean, maybe it's been there for a few years, but not too long. Because 68 is that like CBS era cusp.
Right.
Where it's like...
Where CBS is buying them, but they're still using old parts.
Right. Right.
It's the thing that's always interesting to me is that these parts that don't have anything to do with the musical quality or the sound quality of an instrument have this kind of value. And I get, you know, if you're trying to complete your guitar that has vintage parts on it, like that you would spend the money on this sort of thing.
Yeah, you got to get the, you know, 1965 pots and...
Yeah, yeah. We knew a guy who was a guitar tech, and he would talk about... when he would run into vintage pots and vintage like output jacks and stuff like that, he would sell them for these ungodly prices. And like, I'd never spend that kind of money because I abuse my guitars and sure. I would break that stuff. But there are people out there who want these vintage parts for their projects or their thing that they're, you know, redoing or what's the term? Renovating.
Restoring.
Restoring.
And the real take home here is, I mean, the Fender Strat neck plate. Uh-huh. Wow, I spaced that one out. The neck plate that Fender has used hasn't changed. Maybe not ever. Really. I've seen very slight variations on it, but the basic neck plate is basically the same. The one in this ad looks like the same one on my Strat, which is like I said, last episode or a couple episodes ago, it's uh-huh. like a mid-80s Strat. Probably is the same one that's on your Strat, which is like a lot newer.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's just a piece of metal with four holes in it.
Yeah,
it doesn't do anything other than hold the neck on. Steve's got an ad he's going to read.
All right, so we got this from Cody Thompson. This is a
thanks, Cody.
Vintage Acoustic Control Corporation amplifier in Northeast Portland for $450. This is I'll read the ad first.
Yeah,
for sale is a late because this is kind of a neat story and it's one that I used to know more about. Some of it's faded, but we'll talk about it. For sale is a late '80s Acoustic Control Corp 160T tube head. This is the amp that put Acoustic out of business before Guitar Center bought the name, sort of.
Yeah.
The amp copied the Mesa Mark series so closely that Mesa sued Acoustic for it. Yeah, okay. The amp is switchable from 100 to 60 watts, has two channels, built-in reverb, 5-band graphic EQ, as well as an effects loop. Something that's also cool is that similar to Dumble, this amp can be switched between a MOSFET or tube preamp. The clean tones are amazing, making it a great amp for pedals. I got it from Centaur about a year ago. They had it gone over by Brian Sowers and cleaned up. I'm guessing if you live in Northeast Portland, you know who the this store and whatever. After I got it, I also had Jim at Amphead check it out. For a 30-plus-year-old amp, it's in great shape. And that's basically it. There's some contact information. So parts of the story are at least fairly accurate in the lore of vintage of Acoustic Control Corporation. Uh-huh. Some of it's, there's gaps. Is this the amp that put Acoustic out of business? Sort of.
It's an amp when they were going out of business.
Yeah, this was kind of this is what they call Wagner. I believe this was Wagner era.
Okay.
Which was mid-80s, 85, 86. They did have like some stuff come out after that, but it basically by that point it was over.
Sure.
This was also, I think, their... Not their, I don't think their first foray into tube amps, but basically their first foray into tube amps since they had become like a big company.
Right.
I think there were some tube amps that they had made like in the late 1960s before they were really the Acoustic Control Corporation of legend.
And we've talked about these Acoustic Control amps before. Steve and I are both big fans.
Yeah.
I'm using Steve's Acoustic 150 right now.
Yeah.
Acoustic is famous for their solid state amps, their vintage solid state amps that are I think they just sound amazing for being solid state.
They're great amps.
To see one that's tube is unusual though.
Yeah, I've seen these before. I've always heard they sound great. I was looking at some eBay listings. $450 for this head is a solid price apparently, because I don't know what they're selling for because people don't really buy them. They're
fairly rare.
They're rare, and only people who know the Acoustic story are the ones putting money down on it.
Sure.
But I was finding completed listings that didn't sell for like $800.
Uh-huh.
But again, they didn't sell, so who knows what that means.
Right.
Acoustic stuff, I think if you go and like you listen to the Doors records, both whatever the keyboardist and the guitarist, Robbie Krieger and...
Uh-huh.
I don't remember what the other guys' names were. I think maybe all of them were using Acoustic amps.
Oh, really? The solid states or that too?
The solid states.
Yeah. Tons of people use the solid states.
The solid states have... Ryan has this sweet painting in our recording room of Albert...
Albert King.
Albert King.
He would play...
And he played an Acoustic 270, which was a kind of a more interesting... thing they did. It was a solid, again, a solid state amp, and the cabinet, the 271, I believe was the model number, had a giant like tweeter on the top of it, like a hi-fi looking thing.
I think it was like a 15-inch speaker with a tweeter.
Yeah.
So it's like a really unusual for a guitar amp. But it's, what's interesting about that is that you've got this old blues guy, a famous blues guy, playing through
a solid state
amp. And if you know anything about Stevie Ray Vaughan, Stevie Ray Vaughan kind of idolized Albert King's tone.
Right.
And the tone he was going after was originally produced with a solid state amp.
Right.
He went a completely different direction to achieve that tone. Instead of using a flying V and a solid state amp, he used a Strat and he used twin reverbs, right?
I don't know.
And then he stacked the... all sorts of tube screamers.
He was all about
tube
screamers. So the other part of the story that is the less accurate part is, one is acoustic, like I said, was kind of already on the outs before they made this amp. This was definitely, as far as I've ever understood it, this was kind of the nail in the coffin.
Sure.
The other thing is it says that put acoustic out of business before Guitar Center bought the name.
Yes, it was before.
Yes. So acoustic went out of business in the end of the 80s. I think that acoustic B3 that I had, I had this big 300-watt solid state amp, I think was after these came out. That was actually the last generation. Was that weird, they had called the Collaboration Series. I'd have to check my dates. This is kind of like stuff that 8 years ago I had in the back of my head, like, all
sure.
the time. It's just, I have to make room for other things. Anyway, after they sold the name, that I think Acoustic actually sold the rights to Samick. And so, fun fact, if you ever watched the movie, so they sold the rights, I think the rights kind of floated. Samick eventually picked it up. And if you ever see the movie... Josie and the Pussycats.
Uh-huh.
The back line for the band, and I'm talking about like the...
What do you mean if you ever see Josie and the Pussycats? If you happen to be watching it this week in your weekly routine of always watching it every
Thursday. Is
Josie
and the Pussycats on your top 10 greatest guitar movies of all time?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Top five?
I think I saw it when it came out because my sister rented it.
That's too bad.
I don't think I paid attention to it.
But anyway, they actually use acoustic amps.
Oh, okay.
That I believe were from the Samick production. But again, Samick, like, this was something where Samick made a bunch. I think maybe they sold some of them in Japan.
Sure.
People in the United States saw pictures of them, and they were like doing reproductions of them. But then nothing really came of it. And then Samick had it, and I don't remember who had it after that. But basically, it went from being Acoustic Control Corporation to something where, like, just the acoustic badge was kind of getting, like, passed around from company to company.
Yeah.
And currently, like the ad says, Guitar Center owns the rights to the acoustic name, sort of. The current acoustic line is, last I heard, was being manufactured by, I think, either Loud or St. Louis Music.
Uh-huh.
Basically, I want to say it's like the same company that's making, or at least at one point used to own, like, Crate and like that kind of,
right,
those kind of stuff.
It's kind of like Kirkland brand. Like, you go to Costco and there's Kirkland brand.
Yeah.
Costco's not actually manufacturing that stuff. They're having other companies manufacture the stuff, and then they're just putting that brand
on
it.
The actual... I don't know if this is currently the case, but if you look at the design features for a lot of acoustic amps and then compare it to the design features for a lot of... and layouts, knob layouts, for a lot of custom amps...
Uh-huh.
I believe Custom is actually the company. At least this was the case like four years when these first rolled out, like 4 years ago.
Uh-huh. Custom with a K.
Custom with a K was the company that was manufacturing these. For you Gear Talk Praise and Worship guys, the classic video by Sunseed, Jesus Is a Friend of Mine, also has an acoustic amp. I believe the bass player is running through an acoustic amp in that video, but that's period correct. I mean,
right.
Video came out, and that song is very like late 70s, early 80s, and that was actually a, I think, a Generation 3 acoustic amp when they were still when they started making catering towards the low end, but we're still awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the whole thing, I'm just rambling on this because you got me started.
Well, once we get to talking about acoustic amps, it's all out the window. That's all we're going to talk about.
This has been the topic.
Oh, man, acoustic amps.
So I haven't checked on it in a while, but as far as I know, Guitar Center owns Acoustic. There is a company, and I'm not exactly sure what they badge out. I want to say they sell everything as Acoustic USA.
Uh-huh.
That is basically building amps to similar specifications as the original Generation 1, Generation 2 Fender. Generation 1, Generation 2 acoustic stuff. So they've made like a new Acoustic 360, 361 combo, which is what Jaco Pastorius was saying is for using. It's what the 370, 371, I think, is what John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin used. So Acoustic USA has the rights to sell, but it's like super expensive stuff, like $5,000 for an amp and cab combo.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that.
And, you know, they're not expensive to buy used.
No.
They're on the market. You can buy these used.
Yeah, you can buy these used.
You can get an acoustic head for like $250.
Yeah, you can probably get the 360, 361, or 370, 371 combo for under $1,000. The new one has like some more modern features. Supposedly, they're in the same vibe.
Sure.
But they sound better, but, you know.
Yeah. But anyways, coming back to this
high-end bass stuff.
That's a cool amp. If you're in the area and you're looking for a really interesting old tube amp, that's probably
a great
place to start.
I'm sure it sounds
high wattage.
It'll sound awesome.
If you want to sound loud and you want to sound like loud tubes, I would go for that rather than a Mesa Boogie.
Yeah.
For sure. And it looks great.
Yeah, it's brown.
It's got a cool style to it.
Brown. The brown was a departure, but it was definitely like a good look for them.
So you were saying earlier about how you had stuff in your head maybe 8 years ago that isn't there now.
Yeah.
Talking about this sort of stuff. And I had to have to relay a story to you. Our good friend of the show, Adam Powell, he made the theme music for us and has done other things for us in the past. He went on a road trip recently with his wife and kid. He went out to the Grand Canyon. And on the way there, on the way back, they were catching up on listening to episodes of our show. And his wife, Chelsea, got angry in the way she does, playfully angry, that we know too much stuff.
Oh my gosh.
We just know so much stuff. How could we possibly know all this stuff to the point where we can just talk and talk and talk about it? So I thought that was a funny story.
You
just rambling on and on and on about acoustic
what's
amps.
What's actually really funny funny about it is this is like just for me, probably for you too, like this is just a very small piece of the random crap.
We know too much stuff.
Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about the randomness.
This is what you
later.
Get for caring about something that has very little benefit in your life other than helping you to buy more things that you don't really need.
Yeah. No, guys, I work in science. This is a departure. This is what I do for fun.
Yeah.
I learn random guitar facts.
Yep. Well, we're just always shopping, and when you're always shopping, you're always learning.
Yeah, I'm sure if we asked Chelsea about heirloom tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. Everyone has their hobby. Everyone has things they know about. But it is kind of offensive how much stuff we know about guitars.
Is it offensive?
It's disgusting, I think.
Imagine if we knew all of these things about like something useful.
What if we knew all these things about My Little Pony?
Oh, gosh.
Then people would think
my
we were really
pony,
weird.
My Little Pony.
I found an article about our next ad. It's a company that is making these two instruments. One is called the Baytar, and one is called the Butar.
Yeah.
Hard to read them, but the word sounds easy. Baytar, Butar. But when you're looking at the word, you're like, how do I say this?
Yeah, basically, it's
a Jaguar-style body or Jazzmaster-style body. It's got a custom neck on it. And really unique custom pickups. The pickups grabbed my attention.
I think the pickups look cool.
Yeah.
That's actually the only thing about this guitar that I thought was cool.
The concept is not a new concept. If you're familiar with the band Local H, this is basically what that guitar does.
What was their hit? Do you remember?
Bound for the Floor.
Oh, right.
one where, I'm not going to even try to say it. Look them up if you want to. Basically, Local H is a two-man band where the guitarist plays bass and guitar at the same time.
Right.
In the way that his guitar has two bass strings instead of two low strings on it. And he has hacked in a P bass pickup to go under those strings.
Right.
And he has two outputs. One to go to a guitar amp and one to go to a bass amp. This is kind of a similar concept. It's by the company Eureka Sound. And it's got this custom neck on it that gives you four guitar tuners for your guitar strings. And at the very top side of the fretboard, where your low strings would usually go, there's two bass tuners.
Is that the Baytar?
Yeah.
Or the Butar?
I'm not sure which the difference is. One has one bass string and one has two bass strings.
Right, that's the difference.
That's the difference. So basically, you have a six-string instrument that gives you two bass strings, so you can play bass and guitar at the same time,
right,
to an extent. Stuff like this is really useful for people who are in two-man bands or one-man bands or want to jam around with something really different at home. Like, people really build their style around instruments like this.
Yeah.
I think it's a cool concept. I don't think the execution here is good.
Right.
And I think the reason I don't like it is because what we said earlier about how Local H's guitar has two outputs. This has a single output. If you're really playing bass and guitar at the same time, bass doesn't sound the same through a guitar amp.
No.
If you want to sound like a bass guitar, you need to run through a bass amp. And you definitely don't want to play your guitar through a bass amp unless you're going through for a really clean sound.
Pedals.
But still, you want to split that up.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Yeah, I'm not about it.
Are you sure it's only single output?
I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong.
Let me see that thing.
I didn't read it all the way.
Now we pause as Ryan
reads. Yeah, now we pause the podcast so Ryan can read stuff. I don't see anything on the list that says anything about two outputs. And the demos I watched, there was only one cable plugged into the guitar. Really?
Okay, well, that settles it.
Yeah, another thing that's neat, though, and I kind of want to get in touch with this company just to see if I can buy the pickups. Because the pickups are a really interesting design. They're completely circular. They're like little round buttons.
Yeah, they kind of remind me of the Music Master.
Yeah, like the old pickups, Fender, like those split Fender pickups.
The old, little oval ones.
Yeah, and there's only three pickups on one of the models and four on the other. But they're little circles, and they look like they fit under two strings at a time. I would love to play around with a bunch of those. I'd love to get my hands on...
Like 10 of them?
Yeah, about 10 of them, or like 9 of them.
Right.
And throw together a guitar that just has all these little dots all over the place, and individually select them with individual toggle switches. I can have a guitar with 9 toggle switches on it, and I can choose which pickup combinations I want ad nauseum. Like, just completely insane combinations. So maybe that'll be part of my gear journey in the future, is getting in touch with these guys and ordering a bunch of little pickups.
Be like, hey, we talked about you on our podcast. Can you send me some pickups?
Yeah, I don't think we want to tell them that we talked about them, because we kind of just said that we don't like it.
Well, it's a design. Well, I mean, they could improve on the design. They could take your suggestion.
Just, well, that's true. Just all they got to do to get me to give a thumbs up is to put a second output on there.
Yeah. I mean, I like the concept. I just, I would never play it personally, but
I could see myself messing around with it. I don't know. I could see that sort of concept being embraced by a few people that I know, you know, like, oh, I'm going to play this and it's going to be like my instrument for this band specifically.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So look them up if you want to see it. I'll post a picture of the ad so you can see what we're talking about. Do we want to move on to topics?
Let's do it.
Okay, we've got a topic. Let me pull up the original post.
Oh, yeah.
I'm grabbing this from...
Today we're going to talk about girls.
We're going to talk about girls.
Sub girls.
Hey, ladies. Or the women.
It's going to get real misogynistic up in here.
I hope not. Well, I don't know. Massage does sound kind of nice.
No, that's different. Misogynistic?
Okay, well, we'll talk about that later.
What?
This is a post that was originally put on Gear Talk Praise and Worship. And it's I'm just going to read it. It's not specific to the praise and worship scene. It's, I think it could be applied very generally to the guitar scene and the music scene in general.
Yeah.
Here, I'll read it. Okay, this is kind of the elephant in the room, but what do we as men do about the lack of women playing instruments, not just singers? I know it's not just a praise and worship issue, and it flows from a wider industry problem. But just like in business, there are loads of women that want to play or might want to play, but there are no role models for them. So practically, what can we do to encourage and lift up our sisters in faith to be more involved? Or lift up our sisters in rock to be more involved, or
sure,
our sisters in music. And the responses are all over the map, and I thought it was just a really interesting topic. What's your take on it, Steve?
So there's kind of two sides to this, and one is, and one of the things that, one of the points that, so there are actually a couple girls or ladies, yes, or I don't know how old they are, so I don't really know how to reference females.
Sure. I just say ladies. I think ladies is all encompassing. I don't know
that kind of
if that is degrading anyway. I hope not.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And what they mention is
whatever,
like, is the issue that they tend to run into is that for me as a bass player, people say like, oh man, you're a great bass player, or they don't really say that, but
if for, they did,
someone might say like, oh, you're a great bass player. Whereas if a girl was a great bass player, they would say, oh, you're a really good girl bass player.
Yeah, or you're a great bass player for a girl.
Yeah. And it's like, so one of them was talking about that is a female multi-instrumentalist. Oh, and she's known in like her town's studio musician circle as, oh yeah, get the girl drummer.
Right.
Like, oh, not go get whatever her name
go
is.
Go get this person by their name.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just
because
go,
you're
go,
a professional
go get the
musician.
Girl drummer. Go get the girl. And she plays guitar and bass, I think. Yeah. Oh, go get the girl bass player. She's really good. Why right. is she the girl bass player? Why not? Oh, just why not go get name? She's yeah. really good.
Like, if I talk about some other musician that I know, I don't, that happens to be a man, I go, oh, go get this man musician or go get yeah. this boy musician. Unless, you know, I guess if they were really young, I would call them a child musician.
Right.
but yeah, I think you've really struck to the heart of the issue pretty darn quick here, Steve.
Yeah, I just went for it. I mean, we can expand on. This is definitely something we will expand on over the next few minutes. But
generally, people, what I've learned in life is people don't like to be pigeonholed or complimented or even addressed on the aspects of their identity that they don't have control over. Like, so, like, I'm a tall person, I've got hair of a certain color, and I've got eyes of a certain color. It makes me feel a little uncomfortable when people come up to me and say, and compliment me on my physical features. Like, oh, you're so tall. Yeah, I'm tall. Didn't have anything to do with that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks for the compliment. I didn't do that. Like, that's just how I turned out. Like, I can only imagine, like, how frustrating that would be if you've worked so hard for so much of your life to become a person of skill, and then that skill is always prefaced by your gender, which is something you didn't have control over. And it's like, why are you mentioning my gender at all? Yeah. Like, mention how good I am at doing this or how bad I am at doing this.
Oh, we need a guitar player. Oh, yeah. Go get that blonde guitar player.
Yeah. Get us a real nice blonde guitar player. Yeah.
So
or a real tall guitar player. Like people, that makes people uncomfortable.
It doesn't make sense otherwise.
Right. People want to be complimented and recognized for their abilities and their personal achievements. Yeah.
So I think part of this is just that one, and actually my wife was talking about this in writing in the, cause she's an English major, and she was reading this article about like how like, oh, there's no great, there's like, and it was like a bunch of men saying like, oh, why are male writers so much better than female writers? And I didn't think about this till right now, but it really like feeds in. Why are there so many more male musicians than female musicians? And it's because music was, for a couple of different reasons, but like writing back in the day, like, oh, for, they're saying like, oh, for every Charlotte Bronte,
right,
who wrote Jane Eyre, for you illiterate
That's me.
Guys out there. Or, you know, like Jane Austen or whatever, like your female du jour is like, there's right. like 19 William Shakespeare's. Like, that's kind of like the
19 Shakespeare's.
That's like the mindset, like, oh, for right. every like great female writer of a previous generation, there was like 20 great male right. writers. Yeah. 200 years ago, when these books were being written by women, they were expected to be in the barefoot kitchen, pregnant and naked or whatever.
Barefoot kitchen?
You know, and so...
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Consider, like, when did women get the right to vote in the United States? Like, 1925, something like that? Yeah. Like, as far as the national thing. Like, it was... This is a 21st... Or
and women are still
thing.
Suffraging today.
Yeah. So... So in the same way, like women, if it's always been like women singers because like, oh, you can sing, but then you don't have to carry any of the equipment because it's so heavy. And then I think just kind of like the whole, like, as we talked about in a previous podcast, like the guitar terminology being like this aggressive thing,
mm-hmm.
that kind of mindset of like guitar is like this wild and crazy thing lends itself to a mindset like... fits in a mindset where we say, oh, men can be wild and crazy, but women are supposed to be reserved. Sure. So I think in each generation, we've kind of like had a moment of like female, like where female driven music has kind of like come up.
Uh-huh.
But then it kind of like goes back down and then it comes up again. And it's almost kind of like this novelty thing. So I'm thinking of like, you know, late 60s Janis Joplin, even though she was just sure. like a singer.
And then like the Carpenters. And
like the Carpenters or like Heart.
Yeah. Well, that's 70s and
yeah,
80s.
As you're moving forward, Heart, yeah. The thing.
Pat Benatar.
What's
Joan
the one
Jett.
that Lindsey Buckingham was in?
Oh, I don't know.
Lindsey Buckingham is a dude, but... Fleetwood Mac. So you kind of have these moments where like... You have women, but you think about like, oh, who are your female guitar players? I can only name. Yeah. I honestly can only come up with as far as like rock music.
Sure,
because you got a lot of like female singer songwriters.
Well, there's a ton of girl bands in the '90s.
That's true.
A lot of these.
That's true.
You know, I'd say that a number of them weren't musicians, like playing an instrument. A lot of them were singers. But then you have bands like Veruca Salt. You have Hole.
Yeah.
You have they were just in my head and now they're gone. There was a bunch of yeah. you know, even like Alanis Morissette was playing guitar, and I think there's a broad cultural problem with the image of electric guitar specifically, where it's seen as a men's instrument, which
yeah.
that's not necessarily true. And I think there's only a certain percentage of the population that's ever willing to kind of thumb it at convention and do their own thing.
Right.
And so you're only going to get a certain percentage of girls that are, or women that are going to be like, oh, well, I'm going to learn to be a lead electric guitarist.
Yeah.
Where if a girl or a woman is, or a lady, what term should I use? If a lady is generally interested in music, but they haven't picked like a direction yet, they will more often go to the areas that are already the path that's well trodden.
Right.
They'll become an acoustic singer songwriter type yeah. girl, which is
common. It
works
for Jewel.
They'll become the singer of a band. They
sure.
will play piano, which is common for women and ladies. They, you know, if you look at an orchestra pit these days, there's tons of ladies in the orchestra pit playing violin, playing
right.
cello, playing woodwinds, playing whatever is in there, because the public image is that women can do that.
Yeah,
and it's not a men's only sort of deal. And
right.
I'm sure there are struggles within those communities as far as sexism goes. Anytime there's, you know, some dude with a dick around, he's going to want to put it in something.
Okay.
I'm not
sure how we suddenly got here.
He's going to be, you know, a bad dude to
right.
whoever's around him.
Well, and there's also just the idea that like, all girl bands is, I mean, I don't,
I'm a big fan of like the 90s girl
bands. Yeah, yeah. Were the Breeders an all-girl band?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't think they're all-girl, but you have, what's her name from the Pixies in there?
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's Kim Deal's band.
I did not know that.
She's a bass guitarist.
Right, and she was in the Pixies before.
Yeah, yeah.
Was she the singer in the Pixies?
She would sing in the Pixies.
Frank,
she was kind of like
Black.
A background vocalist, but a lot of people don't want to have the Pixies without Kim Deal sort of deal.
Sure. Sure, and so, but the thing is, like, the Breeders and Veruca Salt and even Hole, they were kind of like, there was, like, this chick rock.
Yeah.
And it was very, it was, like, it always becomes, like, a novelty, and I was just thinking about, like, you know, oh, yeah, you like girl bands like the Breeders, but you never say, hey, you like dude bands? Do you like man bands?
You should really check out this guy band.
Yeah, you should.
Well, there are boy bands.
Yeah, well, that's true. You should check out this man band. They're called Nickelback. They're really cool.
It's all men. You wouldn't believe it.
It's weird.
And
it's
they're
crazy.
Actually pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, did we just say that Nickelback is pretty good?
Yeah, for a man band.
Okay. So that's one thing is that female bands, all girl bands, are treated like a novelty. So maybe they get their like 5 minutes in the spotlight. Or 15 minutes of fame or whatever you want to call it. And then they just fade away.
Well, I think it seems that way just because there's so few of them. Most bands fade away.
Well,
very
yeah.
few bands stick around. But there are you know, other girl musicians out there. Wasn't one of the original members of the Smashing Pumpkins was a lady. I think it was a bassist.
Yeah. Melissa Auftemar.
Yeah, that's right.
Was it Melissa Auftemar?
And I think
I don't know if she was one of the original members. Yeah. Well, so this goes both ways. Billy Corgan is all about female bass players.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, it's like, hooray. We've suddenly segued into like, yo, is this racist? But it's yo, is this sexist?
Right, right.
Where it's like,
you got a new bassist and it's a lady?
And it's a girl. Hooray for promoting women. But what's your deal with gotta have a female bass player?
Yeah, what's
that
going
seems
on there,
like
dude?
Kind of like creepy.
Yeah.
So if we look at this in the worst way possible, like Andrew T would. anyway, and so, yeah, so you have that, and I think there's just a really like a lack of role models in rock music.
Sure.
I mean,
especially in current rock music, I can't think of a single. Girl
a
rock
few years
band right
ago,
now.
Well, a few years ago, you had this. Have you ever watched any of the Orianthe stuff?
No.
So it was this girl, and basically, how she got famous is, well, I don't want to say like how she got famous, because all of a sudden I sound really misogynistic. but she was featured in the. So I guess she was up and coming, and then she was featured in the This Is It, whatever that Michael Jackson like. Remember he was going to go on tour and then he died.
I never watched that.
I didn't watch it either. But I guess she was in it, and she was going to be the guitar player for Michael Jackson.
Okay.
So here you have this girl, who in like the modern era, who's like kind of in that Lita Ford shredder vein of like. You have this girl who can rip Eddie Van Halen's, was it Beat It?
Yeah.
Was that the big one that Van Halen recorded?
A couple. I think he played
on
a couple.
Yeah, he did a few stuff, but a few of those songs, but I think it was Beat It.
There was another one.
Anyway, doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she was in there because she had like serious guitar skills, and then she ended up putting out like a couple songs. Some like a couple small singles, but her name pops up every once in a while as like she's like possibly could be a role model. But at the same time, I remember when she came up, like even I was thinking like, oh, this is different. Like it's a female shredder guitarist. Like this is kind of unique. And so that's kind of just become the mentality. The only other places that you see like all female or like female bands are kind of in these like big like pop productions. So like Beyonce tours with an all girl band.
Right.
Jack White for one of his tours, I think he would play one night with an all girl band and one night with an all guy band.
That's neat.
And then I remember he did some award show and they made a big deal about it because he had both of them at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And they would like trade parts of the song. But the thing is
you bring up Jack White every episode.
I didn't bring him up in last episode. I don't think.
Oh yeah. Okay. You bring him up a lot of episodes.
I do.
What's going on with you and him?
I don't know. I don't even really like the White Stripes or the Raconteurs or the Dead Weathermen or whatever.
You just gravitate towards talking about
it. Yeah. but the thing is there needs to be, I think, like a flag bearer, like a banner, like a you know, some band that is just going to be like that's going to be the girl band that finally breaks through. And is like a hit on every format. The problem is that I don't know if things have to change before that can happen.
Has to change before that happens,
right? And so, does that start with? That's probably something that has to start at the grassroots level, at the ground level, where you know. You meet a girl who plays acoustic guitar and you say, well, why don't you play electric? And you
start
instead of accepting like, oh, this is a girl. Of course she plays acoustic guitar.
Right.
You say, hey, you play, you know, it takes guys who are in bands who are like, I need a second guitar player for my band.
Right.
You play acoustic guitar, but what I need is an electric guitar. You want to play electric guitar in my band. Instead of saying, oh, it's a girl. She plays acoustic. Like she won't be interested. Like,
right. Yeah, I don't know if you'd have the same attitude if you were talking about some dude who plays acoustic. You might be like,
no,
oh,
you wouldn't.
Oh, I could get that guy to play electric.
Yeah.
I guess I could see that scenario playing out.
I think that's one place where it can start. It's, you know, there's different things.
I think society just has to generally change their attitude towards it, and you have to see it get to the point where, you know, people aren't singled out for their gender for playing what they play. People don't really think twice when they see a lady bassist or a lady drummer, but
Silver Sun Pickups have a lady bassist. So
yeah.
Sometimes when you hear the female vocal in Silver Sun Pickups, it's not the dude
singing.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. The first time, here's my story. The first time I heard the Silver Sun Pickups, like when they first started getting on the radio, like the first week or two, I was like, oh, this is really neat. I really like the sound of her voice.
Yeah.
I really like the sound of this. And then I found out it was a dude, and I don't like it anymore.
Yeah,
so I don't think it's a cool dude voice. I think it's a really neat lady voice.
Right, right. I have the album.
Imagining this dude singing the songs doesn't do it for me for some reason.
Yeah, I have the album Swoon, and there's definitely she just does like a lot of harmonies and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And then like he
doesn't look like the sound of his voice either.
No.
I don't know why it bothers me so much. Just, I don't know. Because I like their songs. I think their songs are cool. It's just
close your eyes. Just don't
ask. It doesn't matter. I'm not watching them when I'm listening to the radio.
Just don't ask, who is this?
I know who it is now.
When the song ends, change the station before they tell you who it is.
When I hear his voice, I know who it is.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This whole subject is complicated and it's sensitive. Basically, like what we said at the beginning of the topic is, if you have a musician in your life who's a lady, compliment her or critique her on the basis of her achievements, not on her gender. Like, don't even bring her gender into it because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, change this. And if you catch yourself doing that, then try to adjust it in your life. I know that I'm, you know, trying to adjust that in my life as an American male. Mm-hmm. I'm not always successful. I'm trying to figure out how to be, you know, correctly sensitive when I need to be sensitive. And
music is music, and it's just interesting how, like, certain instruments have been given gender.
Yeah.
I've never heard anyone say, oh, your wife is the girl piano player at church?
No, you never hear that.
Like, oh, your wife plays piano at church. Yeah,
right.
She's one of our three we have three piano players on rotation. People say, oh, your wife plays piano. Yeah.
Oh, that's your girl singer? No one differentiates between genders when it's a singer or piano player or really even a bassist anymore.
Yeah.
or any orchestra instrument or an acoustic guitar, no one says, oh, a girl acoustic guitar player? It doesn't make sense, because you already socially accept that both genders play acoustic guitar.
Right.
And that's really just where we need to get to, you know? Because I want to see and hear, you know, I want to see and hear ladies playing electric guitar.
Yeah.
I want to hear that influence on our society, you know? I want to hear where they're coming from. I want
to
see...
Have you ever listened to the Halo Friendlies?
No.
Tooth and Nail used to have, like, three or four different, like, all-girl punk bands in the late 90s.
Oh, okay.
Like Halo Friendlies, and they had a couple other ones. But anyway, I just hit the mic stand.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
No. What are we going to do? Lose sponsors? Well, let's wrap up this this subject.
Yeah, we're gonna bring you some
another surf rock song, because I put out that notice on the surf guitar forum a couple weeks ago, and I got a couple replies.
Yeah,
thanks to people who replied. This is from David Martinez, yeah. And I think he's from Spain.
He's from Spain, which
that's awesome.
Ryan was telling me that there's like a big like surf.
Yeah, there's a big surf
over
scene
there.
In kind of like the Mediterranean,
yeah.
Like kind of, you know, French Riviera through Greece and Italy and Spain and
right.
All that sort of scene. There's a big festival over there called the Surfer Joe Festival, and a ton of people who play really classic surf rock over there. So we're going to play a track that he sent us. Here, I'll read the description. He says, hello, friend. I send several songs that you can use if you like in your podcast. All we ask in return is that you visit and promotion my SoundCloud page. I'll put a link to the SoundCloud page when we post this episode. Gear used. First guitar, Fender Stratocaster, 50 bridge pickup. Second guitar, Fender Stratocaster, American Deluxe Amber, HSS neck pickup. Having trouble talking at the end of the episode here. Bass throughout software emulation, Ampeg amplifier. Oh, bass through software emulation and then to an Ampeg amplifier. Fender Hot Rod Deluxe modified with middle control. And a Boss FRV1. I have one of those. Oh, an Easy Drummer for drums. So they use a program for drums. That's really interesting. The song is called Dancing Crazy. I give it a listen. It sounds really good to me.
Yeah, it's a cool song.
So I hope you enjoy this song. Thanks for listening to our little podcast here.
60 Cycle.
Like we've mentioned before, if you want to hear us talk about anything, email us at 60cyclehumcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Or jump on the Facebook group.
Tell your friends.
How many subscribers do we have now? Like probably around 85 to 90.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, high 80s.
Yeah.
We want to get that up to the high 80,000s. So,
what? Wow.
So tell...
I was just thinking, like, it would be cool if we broke 100.
Yeah, it would be cool to break 100. I'd like to get enough people on here that I feel a little famous. And I can feel my head grow a little bit.
Oh, gosh.
You know, tell people that I'm involved with this podcast. And when I tell them the name of the podcast, they're like, oh, yeah, I've heard about that. All my friends are talking about that. So, guys, tell your friends, make me famous, make my dreams come true.
Remember when we used to go places and people would be like, oh, I think that's the guitar player from your favorite
band. I
want
to be the first podcaster to have his own signature guitar.
I want to go to the Vons, and when I say, that'll be debit, they'll go, that voice, where do I know that?
Yeah, I feel like I should be buying an electric guitar right now because of your voice. It's so sloshy and slurpy.
Yeah. I want to go.
You have trouble talking.
I want to go on the Tonight Show with Stephen Colbert.
Oh my gosh! I heard people talking. I haven't looked at anything about that yet. I don't know what to think about it yet. Okay, well, this is the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Enjoy the song "Dancing Crazy" by David Martinez and the rest of his guys.
Yep.
This has been the 15th episode.
15.
And this is the part where our voices fade.